Chapter 13. Aspen. Aspen pushed his tattered woven hat back from his sweaty forehead and stared up at the magnificent dragon reclining in front of him. Beryl was much recovered from the near-dead thing she had been becoming in the depths of the cultist's warrens. Her scales now lay smooth and intact, and though her missing eye and skinless wings would never recover, she bore her disfigurement well. "So that makes three companies now?" He shook his head. Each day, as soon as he woke, he made the trek to the field furthest from refuge. It was here that Beryl had found him, a few days after he crushed the dragon tear she'd given him, so that he could call in the favor she'd promised him in exchange for the life of her child. That child, Malachite, was now covered in glistening scales that shaded from deep emerald at his tail, to a brilliant lime horn protruding from the end of his snout. This horn was new from what Aspen remembered, and it seemed that it was new to the baby as well, because his grass-green eyes kept crossing as he tried to examine it. In fact, as Aspen watched, the little dragon raised one clawed foot to bat at the irritating thing in his vision and unbalanced, nearly tipping sideways, until his mother raised one languid claw to gently set him back upright. Aspen smiled, then nearly laughed as the two little unicorns mimicked their much larger friend and pretended to totter on their dainty hooves. Kor, who stood watch nearby, huffed in amusement and attempted to cover it with a particularly loud and moist cud chew. Katie and Kaylee shot their guardian matching dismissive glances and trotted over to nuzzle up against Malachite's side. Beryl shook her enormous head, briefly casting Aspen into shadow. "I never thought I would see the day my child made friends with herbivores, no matter how beloved of the goddess they may be." Aspen chuckled. "It is unexpected, isn't it?" It had been unexpected indeed when Beryl had first appeared, flying in from the north with her dragonling clutched in gentle talons. Aspen had known she would come, of course, since dragons did not go back on their word, but even he hadn't dared hope it would be so soon. He'd been glad that he'd taken the precaution of heading far from the fledgling city, beginning the very day after calling the dragon. Beryl had quickly agreed to his request, and had begun patrolling the mountain pass that afternoon. Her only demand had been that Aspen watch over Malachite while Beryl was gone, so the mother dragon knew her child was safe. Aspen, of course, had gladly consented. What he hadn't realized was that the insatiably curious unicorns and their little princess had followed him, and Juniper set her little chin and swore she'd tell Jiminy about the Durgan if Aspen didn't let them stay. Following an old adage he'd once heard that children keep each other busy, Aspen had grudgingly agreed, and now there were four children playing among his fields while he worked and Beryl flew her patrols. He'd quickly discovered that while the adage was true, it was also true that the amount of trouble children could get into grew exponentially according to the ratio of children to caretakers. Thus it was that Kor and Nekthat joined him each day. The goblin now stood in the shade of a nearby tree, yellow eyes flicking from his niece to the immense beast curled up nearby. Aspen tugged his hat back down and sighed. "I didn't think they'd send so many so quickly. I thought they would send scouts or wait until they could gather more soldiers. Are you sure there have been no survivors?" The dragon licked her scaly lips. "Quite sure. It is odd, though. It's almost as if they do not care about the lives they spend." Aspen stilled, then rubbed at the coiling tension building in his neck. "They probably don't. They outnumber us at least 1,000 to 1, and neither Akuji nor his pet traveler see human lives as any more important than that of a fly." "My observations agree with this." The dragon laid her chin down on her forepaws, her eyes on her dragonling. "I am glad to see Malachite playing. He has been quiet since we fled."
"Understandable," Aspen said. "You both nearly died. I'm just glad to see his body has fully recovered. The scars of the heart," he hesitated, "are more difficult. I could bring my friend Manuela here, if you'd like. She's a soul mage," he held up a hand as Beryl reared back in anger, "but she specializes in mind healing. She was my partner during the war, and she saw how it destroyed the souls of even the warriors who returned home with whole bodies. She has devoted herself to helping people recover from such invisible wounds, and now that she's in a place filled with former soldiers." He trailed off, shrugging. Manuela was finally able to put her true talents to use, and while he would never say that she was grateful for the pain of others, he knew that she was grateful for the opportunity to ease that pain. Now that he'd mentioned Manuela, he decided to change the subject and not press the matter. "Have you seen any goblins yet?" Beryl hesitated, but lowered her head again. She didn't return to her fully relaxed pose, but neither did she look like she was considering whether fight or flight was her best option. No. That's not to say they haven't come, though. There may be paths beneath the mountains I cannot patrol. I know your queen insists there are not, but no one knows all secrets. Aspen nodded. It was entirely possible that the goblin elders had kept some secrets from their putative queen, and not for the first time, he wished that the head librarian was still available. The old man always seemed to have a clue that would set him on the right path. Aspen had asked William to go to the dungeon entrance every night to see if there were any changes, but each time, the hall was still and silent. Even the symbol on the wall was gone. Have you seen anything on your end? The dragon's question was desultory, and she slowly settled her jaw back on her crossed forelegs. Her cerulean eye was thoughtful as she watched her son. Nothing, thankfully. Every evening, Aspen went out and circled through the quiet city and its surroundings, casting Detect Evil as often as he could. The citizens who had volunteered to be part of the militia aided him, as did any of the travelers who were available, and between them, they watched over any entrance that could be made into a passage for the cultists and their monsters. Aspen suspected that the door had to be abandoned or owned by the cult in order for them to claim and use it, and so no new cellars or buildings were allowed outside of town limits. Still though, they checked. All of them were doing their best, and day by day new buildings went up, some above ground and some below, using the wood and stone stockpiled by Cor and William. William had even created a storage room full of native clay that their few skilled crafters were making into everything from bowls and plates, to pickling jars and vases. They'll probably come in greater numbers any day now, Aspen said heavily. When they do, don't. I know. Don't try to fight them. Beryl huffed in annoyance, the bare bones of her wings lifting briefly from her back. You remind me every day. Who do you think I am? I remember. Not that I couldn't kill them all. He chuckled. I know. Humor me though. We just need to know when a Kuji or Phantom Hat come in person. There's no way we can defeat their army, so the only choice is to defeat them. If our people can simply defend themselves and survive under siege, we can cut the head from the snake and send the body slithering home. It's only the goblins we really need to worry about. Since Refuge is now technically a goblin city, we can't keep them out. I wish it was really that simple, he thought ruefully. If a Kuji came, if he was able to bypass the protective power of the Bluestones as he had in Bright, it wouldn't matter how many murderous citizens they had roaming their street. If Phantom Hat came first, preferably alone or with a few of his traveler friends, Aspen thought they had a chance. The man or vampire was powerful to be sure, but Aspen knew his goddess wouldn't have given him a task he couldn't achieve. Hopefully. I'll take care of the goblins, Cor put in. I can smell one of the putrid little warts from a mile away. Cor. Aspen said sharply. Goblins are no more all the same than humans are. The goat snorted. As if you believe that any more than I do. Sarave, Juniper, and Nekthat are different. The rest of them are just the crusty dregs of an infection that rotted out centuries ago. Aspen pulled off his hat and slapped it against his thigh. Dust rose up from it, and he heard a few of the fragile straw stalks snap. He looked toward the goat, who was staring back defiantly. These people are already citizens of our city. Our civilization. If they can't be taught, if they refuse to learn, it's no different than condemning ourselves to join in their fate. Cor turned a broad, short-furred shoulder to Aspen. Say what you want. I'll believe they're salvageable when I see it. In the meantime, I still say the best thing we can do is finish exterminating them like a Kuji should have done. Aspen stilled. Are you really suggesting we follow in a Kuji's footsteps? Nekthat, who had been listening to Aspen's side of the conversation while pretending not to, sent a disbelieving glare at the goat. There was a long, too long pause before Cor sighed and turned so he could fix one brown eye on Aspen. I suppose not, he said reluctantly. But neither am I going to welcome the dregs of mortality based on what they might have been. They can be great again, Aspen said, though even he could hear the uncertainty in his own mental voice. We shall see. With that, Cor trotted over to the little unicorns, who had somehow managed to climb on top of Beryl's tail and were now attempting to scale the enormous dragon. Beryl was watching them with mild amusement, but Cor clearly wasn't ready to depend on the kindness of dragons to keep his charges safe. Aspen sighed and pulled his hat back on. It split on one side, and he could feel the breeze pluck at the hair that was now protruding through the hole. "Time to make a new hat," he muttered, and began to urge the grass nearby to grow. Technically, he could probably have the stalks weave themselves into a hat, but he found the process of weaving relaxing, so he persisted, in spite of his clear inability to create anything worthwhile. Two bare green feet entered his field of vision, and Nekthat crouched, sweeping his knife through the long stalks. The blade was so sharp that the stems fell into the goblin's hands without the slightest resistance. "Kor is still worried about the goblins," Nekthat said flatly. His words were lightly touched by the same lyrical accent that made Sarave's voice so pleasant to hear. But where Sarave had clearly learned the ancient goblin tongue first, or at the same time as the common speech, Nekthat sounded like he had picked it up more from being around others who spoke that way. Aspen nodded and accepted the straw from the goblin's bright green fingers. Awkwardly, he began weaving the crown of a new hat. "I have to admit I'm also concerned." Nekthat shifted, then murmured quietly, "As am I. You know only the worst of my people. The murderers and thieves only learn to be more murderous and thieving in order to survive and thrive in Akuji's empire. Since Akuji fell, some of the others, the crafters, the merchants and the builders, have begun to find their own way, but it is hard to walk a road that no one has traveled in 1,000 years or more. I fear the first that come will be exactly what Kor believes us all to be. I only hope we survive long enough for the rest to break free of their apprehension and seek us out as well." The goblin stood, brushing his simple black leather pants clean of grass seed and dust. "I remember our mother, though. Our grandmother as well, though she died before Saravale was old enough to remember. We had two more brothers too when we were young. I know our people can do better, be better, than what we have been allowed to be. I even know a few who were not in our family, who continue to follow the old ways." "Kurali," he broke off, his gaze locked on the knife he still held. "It was years ago, but Aspen," the goblin prince looked up, single eye focused on his human friend. "We need this chance." Aspen nodded. "I know. So do we. The chance to be better, yes. The chance to grow." His eyes touched the children playing together in the sun. Rainbow fur and sparkles mingled with greenish tan skin and emerald scales. They all needed a chance, and Aspen was going to make sure they got one. No matter what, he had to pay for that chance.